Frank Frangie here. Hewn Flowers has moved their former Ponte Vedra location to Sawgrass Village. And when I need to send a floral arrangement for any reason, I know I can really count on Hewn. Call 398-8601, hewnflowers.com.
4 hours of nothing but football. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
All right, Cincinnati, Ohio, an opportunity to get this dadgum thing turned around. It's about going out on the road. It's about getting it done away from Jacksonville. As a matter of fact, some of you may not know, the final win, historically speaking, for Tom Coughlin as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're back in 2002. Right there in Cincinnati, week 15, Jags went in there, won a football game by the score of 29-15, the final win ever for Tom Coughlin here. Of course, a decorated career, which included a couple of trips to the AFC Championship game, one loss in Foxborough, a loss here, unfortunately, against Tennessee. I believe they were the best team in the NFL in 1999. They could not solve the Titans, who beat them home and away, and then beat them here again during the AFC Championship game. Of course, for Tom Coughlin, he went on to win a couple of Super Bowls with the New York Giants. Now it's up to this football team to put everything aside, go on out and get it done against a football team in Cincinnati that has internal problems, has massive health problems, also has incredible football problems, both offensively and defensively. This is a team only 6 weeks in that can already see the end of the road. I imagine there's guys showing up there Monday through Friday before the weekend, already counting the weeks, counting the days to try to get out of there. And that includes Cordy Glenn. We'll spend a lot of time talking about him coming up in the next couple of hours. As a matter of fact, we'll go out live to Cincinnati in about 30 minutes. Going to talk with Ben Baby, very good reporter. I've enjoyed reading everything that he's put out there the last couple of weeks, getting ready for this game here between the Bengals and the Jaguars. Does some very good work for ESPN. So he's going to, you know, kind of take us through what's going on. The biggest concern that I would have is a desperate team, anything that's desperate. All right, what do? They're willing to strike. They're willing to do whatever it takes to save themselves and save their job. I thought we saw it earlier this year going into Denver. At my point, you know, my point of view being 0-3 on the year, the Broncos had yet to have a sack at the time. They had yet to get to any quarterbacks and were really struggling. Yet they had an incredible fan base, and I thought that it would be a very difficult place for the Jaguars to go out there and win. And, of course, they did pull it off, again, against a desperate football team. Is that the case right now in Cincinnati? I want to believe it is, but I may be wrong. That's why I'm going to bring Ben Baby on from ESPN, kind of give us the overhaul on what's going on internally right now. What does the locker room feel like? Overall, I mean, on paper, Cincinnati looks like a football team that's lost 4 of their 6 games by 6 points or less. Let me repeat that for you. They've lost 4 of 6 games by 6 points or less. Could be a little bit of tomfoolery involved in 3 of those 4 losses, though, where they were down by more than double digits, scored late to make it look more competitive than perhaps it really was when it was all said and done. Anyway, we'll do that coming up in just a little bit. Looking forward to that. That'll be with Ben Baby. Tim Brando's in Stilly tonight. Stillwater. Where else would you rather be? The Baylor Bears, Oklahoma State, the Cowboys. Big game tomorrow at 4 o'clock on Fox. I don't know how much time I'll spend with Timmy B on that, but I'm certainly going to dive into his opinion on Georgia letting one get away last week. South Carolina, a huge win. Can South Carolina win 2 straight? I mean, 2 enormous victories. You get it done against Georgia, which you can kind of make the case, that's their Super Bowl. That's their national championship. I mean, the uninformed, boy, have they ever come out this week. I've heard some people on, I don't know where I heard, it was something on television. It was one of those nameless faceless national media types that was telling me that Will Muschamp's team is playing outstanding defense. Bro, they nearly allowed 500 yards against Georgia. Georgia just made a lot of mistakes. Georgia could not get it done in the red zone. Florida, whatever you put in front of them, they find ways. If I'm a Gator fan right now, I'm not overly disappointed about what happened to them this past Saturday night in Baton Rouge. That is truly one of the most difficult places to play in all of college football. And if that game was on our neutral side, if that game was in Hogtown, I think Florida had a real good chance to win it. Instead, it was in an incredibly difficult environment, and the better team won. But I love Florida going into this weekend's game here now against South Carolina. Nonetheless, I'll get into it with Tim Brando. And, you know, no moment seems too big right now for Kyle Trask. So we'll spend some time talking about that a little bit later on in the program. Florida State going into Winston-Salem. You know, let me say this. For starters, apparently Nestor is going to rear his ugly head. And there's going to be weather in North Carolina. I'll be the first to admit, when it comes to Florida State, I am glass half empty. As a matter of fact, typically I'm just in a real bad mood when it comes to talking about the alma mater. But why can I already write the freaking script for this game? The weather will affect one team and one team only, and that team is wearing garnet and gold. Can't you just see it right now? Close your eyes with me, unless you're merging on the 295. Over-pursuing of a ball carrier. There go the linebackers. It's like they're on skates. Oh, it's the weather. It's the weather. An automatic pick six by a defensive back. Couldn't hold on to it. It was the weather. Whoever the quarterback is going to be, and we'll find out, Willie Taggart apparently will flip a coin before kick tomorrow night at 7:30. Perfect route, perfect throw. All of a sudden, the wide receiver loses his footing. It's a pick six going the other way. 7 points, Demon Deacons. Am I wrong? I mean, seriously, am I wrong? I mean, you can love Florida State, you can hate Florida State. You can love me, you can despise me. But you know one thing is certainly correct. That is going to be the case in this game. The weather's going to affect one team. And only one team. And that team is Florida State. They didn't use Cam Akers last week, and when they did, they were down 42-0. It still really boils my blood that they risked running him and using him the way that they were trailing, okay? What if he did get hurt? You should have sat him down. But again, that's pitiful coaching by Florida State. I'm going to break it down for you, and then I'm going to get off it because, frankly, I'm going to be as honest as I really can. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Florida State's not worthy of 5 o'clock mention. That's how bad this program is. They better win the next 5 games. Anything short of that, and I'm firing Willie Taggart. I don't give a damn about his buyout. Don't tell me you don't beat Wake Forest. Don't tell me you don't beat Syracuse. Don't tell me you don't beat Miami, the U. You know what the U is right now? I've said it to people before. Miami is fat and bald. Miami is the definition of a dad's bod. They really are. They're never coming back. Florida State's going to come back. It's just a matter of when. Florida's on their way back. You're actually seeing it. Miami's never coming back. Miami's got a dad's bod, and Miami looks like Mr. Clean. They're never coming back. Florida State beats Miami in 3 weeks, or at least they should. At BC in front of 35,000. Another one, Alabama State. All right, Florida's a totally different story. But the next 5 weeks should be 5 straight wins for the Garnet and Gold. End of story. Period. No excuses. I can't wait to hear the weather ones, though, coming in late Saturday night. Hopefully I'll lose my phone. If not, I might get thrown off Twitter. All right, so we have that to get into. Tim Brando a little bit later on in the program. Guarantees by a sports talk show host are completely useless. All right? They're absolutely uncalled for. In my opinion, they're on par with, let's say, Rosie O'Donnell actually eating with a knife and a fork. For those of you who don't know what that means, Rosie's a meat eater, and she eats only with her hands. I'm not going to guarantee a Jaguar win on the road. I'm not going to do that. But here's what I'm asking for, and this is the only thing that I'm asking for. How about a 7-0 Jaguars lead? Is that too much for the good people of Jacksonville? How about a 7-0 Jaguars lead? Author it. Orchestrate it. Engineer it. I want a 14-play, 75-yard drive, taking 6 minutes, 38 seconds. I mean, feel free for once to grab a lead. 7-0 Jacksonville. Say it after me right now in your car or truck. 7-0 Jacksonville. Gibby, can you say that for me, please? Can you give me a 7-0 Jacksonville?
How about 7-0?
That's all I ask. I'm not asking for a win. I'm not asking for a 28-35-point win. I'm not asking for that. What I'm asking for is, instead of trailing in 5 of your first 6 games, in 4 of those first 6 games, you're trailing by double digits, taking that into the second half, it is legally accepted to go into Cincinnati and go up 7-0. That's allowed. And I hope it does take place this weekend. That's the only thing that interests me. Get out early. Get a lead. Get it done against the Cincinnati team, which I believe if you get that lead 7-0, man, they're looking at the clock. It appears as if they really don't want to be there. Again, Ben Baby coming up, and he's going to join us in less than 30 minutes. We'll get the very latest from the Jaguars. All right, caught up with Josh Oliver today after Doug Marrone spoke. We're going to play that on the other side. Jags are nicked up. Skill position-wise, there are issues. Marquise Lee, not going to go. Jeff Swaim, not going to go. D.D. Westbrook with a shoulder, we'll see. Honestly, I have no idea. If I was to, as I steal one from Willie Taggart, flip a coin, I'd say I think he does play. They need him in there this weekend. If you have not heard, Nick Foles will begin to practice on Wednesday. All right, he's not eligible to come back until after the bye and after that matchup against the Texans in London. But at least he appears to be on schedule, maybe even ahead of it. Minshew so far this year has been extremely impressive on the road. I mean, the recipe is here. Cincinnati Bengals are the worst team in pro football when it comes to running the football. They're also the worst team in the National Football League when it comes to defending the run. On top of that, you look at the 7 injuries that they do have, including their starting corners both being out. The Jags should be able to put up points on the road. So we have all that to take a look at. We'll come back on the other side and really dive into some of the keys here for the Jaguars as they go out to Cincinnati. Remember, pregame at 8, in-game at 1, postgame as well, all right here on 1010XL. In 92.5 FM, we are the flagship for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Really looking forward to this game. You know, let me also add this. I think there were some unfair expectations going back to Kansas City when Minshew came in. I heard it. I listen to this station all the time. I read what you send me on social media, whether it's Twitter, which is up and good right now, Blue1010XL, or if you want to hit me on the 1010XL text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures, at 641-1010. There were a lot of 7-2s out there. There were a lot of 6-3s out there before the bye. I remember saying I'd take a 4-5, and I would gush over a 5-4. Well, reality is set in. The best you're going to get is a 5-4. And right now at 2-4, you certainly have to take care of business in Cincinnati. All right. You got the luxury of the Jets playing on Monday night, okay, against a physical New England football team. Maybe you can soften them up just a little bit. And you can take advantage of the extra day off, plus sitting back and watching the fact that New York's going to play into very late Monday evening. They got to come here for that football game. Those are all intangibles that, in my opinion, favor the Jaguars. But that's looking ahead. You got to win these next two. And it begins in Cincy, even up at 4-4. Then we'll see what happens in London. But I don't like must-win situations. Not when you're going into Game 7 of a 16-game tilt. I think the wording is incorrect. But after everything this organization has been through, this game is going to be telling. That's why I began with a 7-0. If there's one thing I wish I could give Jaguar fans after everything they've been through in the last 3 weeks, dare I say, how about a stress-free game? Seriously. What about going out there and getting up early? 7-0, 10-0, 14-3, whatever it is. And you're sitting there cracking open beers with your buddies, eating food, having a great time, just sitting there smiling ear to ear because for once in your life, you get a stress-free football game. Now, I know that that's ridiculous for me to say considering they're 4-14 in their last 18. But that's what I'm hoping for. We can all hope. All right, when we come back, let's stay with the Jags. Some keys to this matchup, including a quick conversation that I did have today with the return of Josh Oliver. He will play for the first time this year for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Glad you're with us. My name's Rick Ballew. This is our Football Friday show. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. That's 520. I'm Rick Ballew with you tonight till 7, wishing all of you a fantastic weekend. Again, I'm asking for a 7-0 Jaguars lead. That's it. Getting a lot of people responding to me on Twitter. I love it. Saying 7-0 Jags. Send it on out there. Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL. I can't help but see this story out of New Orleans that popped out at, 4:33 this afternoon. Both were really hit hard last week, but ended up, you know, really becoming difference makers in the Saints' victory over the Jags. No Jared Cook this weekend. He's got an ankle. Really soft hands, back of the end zone. Also on that broken down play, was wide open late in the game. It came up big there. And obviously Alvin Kamara with two injuries. He's got an ankle and a knee. So neither one of the two. You know, and they did that a few weeks ago in Charlotte as well with McCaffrey. Really knocked him out late in the game. So the defense is a physical bunch. They're doing their part. But I still believe there's issues that they need to clean up. Actually went through it today during our Jaguars radio broadcast meeting because I asked the question. They only have two blocked balls all year, both from Yannick Ngakoue, in six games. Two tip passes, two blocked down balls. You know, one takeaway, which, you know, they say hitting is contagious in Major League Baseball. I kind of feel that the takeaways come in bunches, but, I mean, feel free to grab one here and there. They've been forcing some fumbles lately. They just can't get on them. They don't have a forced fumble recovery all year by their defense. They have one on special teams, and they have one interception all year by Ronnie Harrison. I mean, that's not good enough. Six games, one takeaway by your defense. That has to improve. Hopefully Cincinnati is the spot where that will take place. All right, the Bengals are not a good football team. They are worst against the run in the NFL. They are the worst running team in the NFL. Obviously, because of that, their time of possession is very poor as well. How do you dominate the time of possession? You run the ball, and you get off the field defensively. You look at their numbers on the defensive side, staggering. Yards per game, 31st in pro football, 426 a game. This is like Pac-12 football numbers, all right? Yards per play, 31st in pro football, 6.49. I always look at points for and points against. To me, those are the two most important numbers that any team, statistically speaking, can have. They allow 26.5 a game. That's 26th in pro football. Already told you about their rush defense, dead last at 32nd. They only have 7 sacks all year. And on top of that, Carlos Dunlap may not play. He's doubtful with the knee. Geno Atkins, I mean the former Gator there. Geno Atkins, the 10-year star out of Georgia, 1 sack all season. The rookie out of Auburn, Carl Lawson, will not play with a hamstring. They're without their 2 starting corners. Dre Kirkpatrick did not play last week with a knee. William Jackson III is not going to go this week with a shoulder. This is a defense that is just absolutely destroyed. Offensively, they have problems. Cordy Glenn hasn't played all year. Practice Wednesday, got into it with someone in the locker room. I believe it was the offensive line coach. I'm going to ask Ben Baby about this when he joins me in about 10 minutes. He has now been suspended. He's not going. You're starting left tackle. The backup, Andre Smith, kind of their swing guys, played left tackle this year. He rolled an ankle. He's out. You're going with the third string left tackle against the Jaguars. Kid by the name of John Jerry. A.J. Green, not playing. The ankle, out. Starting right guard, John Miller, out with a groin. 7 starters and maybe 8 if Carlos Dunlap does not play. That's what the Bengals are looking like for this football game at 1 o'clock on Sunday. It all sets up for the Jaguars. The Jags are getting healthy. They're getting some good news as well. That does include the return of Josh Oliver. All right, let's get into this by bringing in our sponsor. That is, of course, the DeAugustinis Group, Michael DeAugustinis and the DeAugustinis Group right here from Coldwell Banker Vanguard Realty. They've got you covered, whether it's luxury properties, golf course, waterfront homes, military relocations, first-time home buyers. Doesn't matter. Just give Mike a phone call today at 599-5690 or go to Northeast Florida Homes Sales.com. Had a brief conversation today with Josh Oliver in the Jaguars locker room. Here's what it sounded like.
All right, here with Josh Oliver. I understand it was a good week for you. Overall, how do you feel?
I feel good. I'm healthy, and I'm ready to go on my feet.
What do you expect this week? How much do you think you'll be used once you get this opportunity in Cincinnati?
It's up to the coaches how much I play and stuff. I'm just going to come out and compete. Whatever situation I'm in, I'm always going to come out and compete.
How hard has this been since the beginning of training camp to not be able to get out there and give it a go?
Oh, I mean, it's been tremendously hard. It's the first major injury I've really had in my career. And it kind of took me, it gave me a step back away, and I was able to see it from more of a coach's perspective and stuff. So it hasn't been all negative, but it's definitely been a 7 block to overcome.
When you were healthy, you were working with Nick Foles as well. How familiar are you now since you've been able to get back out there and work with Gardner?
Me and Gardner were roommates in the summer. We took a lot of reps together with twos and stuff and during camp, and so I think we're pretty familiar with each other.
Thank you.
All right, Gardner Minshew, Josh Oliver. Josh really looked the part before he got injured, and I know you've heard that before. Heck, I'm on record last year believing that Austin Seferian Jenkins would lead the team in receptions. I mean, he looked that good last year in camp with Blake Bortles, and then, of course, Bortles went away, and ASJ could never really get on the football field. But this is your classic makeshift tight end, a guy. I mean, there's 2 things we heard about this rookie class. Number one, Josh Oliver cannot block. And if he's out there, they're obviously passing. And if they're not passing, then having him out there would be kind of like, why? What are you trying to disguise? The other was that Rock Armstead cannot catch the football. Well, he caught a pretty big one to me in Denver. I mean, are you kidding me? He was a 3rd down back, and he went out and he made that play. So, you know, they've been working to try to make him more of a blocker, but it's tough to work when you missed the majority of training camp and you've missed 6 weeks during the regular season because you're battling back from this bad hamstring. He's got phenomenal speed. He appears to have very good hands. And I think he can provide a dimension right now to this Jaguar football team that frankly they do not have. I think the blow of losing James O'Shaughnessy is a little bit more relevant than a lot of people would probably admit. I think he had become a favorite part of this offense for Gardner Minshew. And that relationship was gelling. It led to a couple of touchdowns, but there were a couple of third down conversions that they were able to put together. And whether or not it's Nick Foles after the bye or it's Gardner Minshew after the bye, a tight end should be an important component to this offense. And certainly it always has been for Nick Foles, no matter where his stops have been. He is one of the most prolific quarterbacks in the National Football League at completing passes 10 yards or less. It is forte, the tight end, and hitting a back out of the backfield. And I think the latter part of that has been, you know, just phenomenal this year. Look at what Leonard Fournette has already done. I remember I had numbers for Fournette. I said if he goes over 1,000, has 12 touchdowns, and has 40 receptions for another couple of touchdowns, that I believe the Jaguars will in fact be a playoff team. Well, Fournette right now is among league leaders in rushing. He's averaging just under 100 a game at 584 in six games. And he's already on the season caught 26 footballs. I mean, that's very impressive. So that end of it, I like. And, you know, of course, Alfred Blue is beginning to practice now. He'll be eligible in a couple of weeks. You got to wonder, I don't want to jinx anything here, but Leonard's yet to prove that he can go a full season. And they're certainly getting a ton of burn out of him. I mean, they are really utilizing Leonard Fournette. Yards from scrimmage, I want to say he's either second or third in pro football. McCaffrey leads the NFL. And again, with his rushing, he's among lead leaders. He is leading the league right now overall in the AFC. So those are certainly very positive numbers right there. One thing that I would love to see to begin to pick up for the Jaguars this year, and this may surprise some people out there, but once again, here are the Jags as they get ready for this football game. They've done a real good job running the football, okay? I mean, as a team, they're averaging more than 5 yards a carry. As a team, they've picked up 765 yards all year on the ground. I mean, you divide that by six, that's impressive. Let's see, the Jaguars here running the football, 127.5 yards a game. That's 11th in the NFL. That's good. And that's really good if you consider the fact which I began this show with, asking for a 7-0 lead. The reason why I asked for a 7-0 lead was why? Because they've been trailing in five of their six games this year. They've been trailing by double digits in four of their six games. Outside of Tennessee, they've been trailing the entire year, except for in Denver. They had a lead there in the second half in Denver. They surrendered it, came back and won it in the fourth quarter, but they did have a lead at some point in that game in Denver. Kansas City, Houston, Carolina, they're trailing the whole game. That's tough to do. This blew me away, and if it blows me away, I have a feeling it's going to blow you away. I got this from NFL Media earlier in the week. So far this year, during the 2019 season, there have been 167 rushing touchdowns by all 32 teams. The record at this point for rushing touchdowns goes back to 1979. When there was 187 rushing touchdowns. Still, 167 through 32 teams, six games apiece. Jaguars have one rushing touchdown. That has to change. That absolutely has to change. Gardner Minshew's numbers in the red zone are number one in pro football. It's not Pat Mahomes. It's not Aaron Rodgers. It's not Dak Prescott. It's not Tom. It's Gardner Minshew. He is the top overall red zone quarterback in the National Football League. And the Jags have shown us in the last 3 weeks that they can run the ball in the second half. Not the entire 60 minutes, but in the second half, particularly at Denver and Carolina. I mean, last week was not as good, but still was better than average. Got to run the ball in the red zone as well. Got to run the ball at goal line. The one touchdown on the year on the ground is unacceptable. All right, we're going to hear from our good friend coming up here in just a couple of minutes. That is Ben Baby. First things first, let's get you caught up on everything else that's going on, including our future phenom. It's brought to you by JOI. It's Where the Pros Go, his Lauren Rue.
Future Phenom.
This week's Future Phenom, brought to you by JOI, is a sophomore from Bishop Snyder. Her name is Ellie Wilhelm. And Ellie, the first thing I asked when you walked in was, which sport do you play? And I have to be honest, I made a lot of assumptions, and the answer you gave me was not one that I had correct. So why don't you tell everybody what sport you play?
I play football.
What position do you play?
I'm a kicker, and I'm working on becoming a punter.
How long have you been on the football team?
Not long. I started in April.
Okay, so this is your first season. What went into making the decision to join the football team?
Well, I've played soccer my whole entire life since I was five, and I have always watched football. I've always really wanted to play.
How did your parents feel about when you said, hey, I want to join the football team?
They're really supportive, a little bit nervous, but they couldn't have been happier about it.
How about the other guys on the team? How have they embraced you?
It was tough at first. People wouldn't talk to me, and we've really bonded over the past couple of months, and I've really enjoyed it.
What are your personal goals for this season?
I would just like to get better and get to know the sport and play as much as I can. I love it.
You think we'll ever see one on the professional side?
I would really hope so.
Yeah.
I'd love to be the first.
Who is your favorite kicker?
Mason Crosby.
Have you been tackled yet or hit yet?
I have.
And?
Every day. I love it.
Yeah. And have you done that in return? Have you tackled anybody in return?
Of course.
And you like that as well?
Yeah.
Very good. All right, Ellie, I appreciate the time and best of luck this season.
Thank you.
All right, today's Jaguars report, again, brought to you by Michael DeAugustinis and the DeAugustinis Group at Coldwell Banker Vanguard Realty. All right, whether you're a first-time home buyer, luxury properties, golf course, waterfront homes, military relocations, make sure you give them a phone call, 599-5690, and they'll give you a free home evaluation. It's as simple as that. Go to northeastfloridahomesales.com. Coming up next, we go to Cincinnati. Let's talk with Ben Baby of ESPN. Find out what's going on with the Bengals. The Jaguars try to go out there and win for the third time this year. All of that coming up. All right, let's get into the Jaguars and Bengals, brought to you by Pet Paradise. They are a comprehensive pet care provider offering boarding, daycare, grooming, and veterinary services right here in Jacksonville. Make sure you visit petparadise.com. They are the official provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's go to Cincinnati, and joining us here with Rick Ballew, he covers the beat for the Cincinnati Bengals for ESPN. Ben Baby joins 1010XL and 92.5 FM. How you doing today, Ben?
Hey, doing well. How are y'all doing?
Do appreciate a couple minutes of your time. On the surface, what, seven guys out, maybe eight, one player suspended, and it's a winless team. Is it as bad as I just described it?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much on the money here. It's interesting when you look at the Bengals against the spread this year and the way that they played games. It looks like they've been a little closer, especially the last couple weeks, maybe perhaps than their record might indicate, to winning a game. But you know, I think that might be a little deceiving. You know, especially in the loss against Arizona and then last week as well. You know, I think the points at the end of the game weren't indicative of how close it was. The offense has really struggled the last 3 weeks, and granted, you've been without A.J. Green and John Ross and your starting left tackle, Cordy Glenn, but still, I think the offense should be better than what it is, and I think that's kind of, a cause for concern. And then you look at the defensive side of the ball, and yeah, you're missing a couple key guys here and there, but, you know, the linebackers are healthy, and they're not playing well. You're hoping to get a little more out of your pass rush, including Geno Atkins, who only has one sack for six games, so. You know, I think, you know, whenever Zach Taylor took the job and became the new Bengals coach, I think a lot of people thought this was going to be that would be the fix they needed to be a winning franchise again. But, you know, looking at the roster, I think there's a lot of things that need to be done, and that's why this year's draft, and I think upcoming moves are going to be really important to see how competitive this team can be.
What's the environment like? I mean, have you seen it change from, let's say, week one, week two, to being in there this past week?
I think it's been a little quieter the last few weeks. I think you haven't seen the same kind of vibrance. I think that'd probably be the best way to put it in the locker room. But I don't think necessarily that guys are down. I think it's just, you know, especially from our end. I mean, there's only so many things you can ask and talk about whenever you've basically lost, you know, the first six games. And the thing is that the problems are apparent, and there is no solution. You know, because if there was, you know, they would have found it by now. I think the things that really has been harming the Bengals since, you know, for the entire season is their lack of red zone efficiency, the inability to get the offense rolling early, and then on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, I would look for Jacksonville to try to find success on the edges and run off tackle a lot and really test the lateral speed of the Bengals. And, you know, this run defense is so poor. It's the worst in the NFL by a margin. I don't know how often Jacksonville's going to really need to throw the ball. So when you've got a quarterback situation like they have, you know, you're really in good shape, because as long as you can, you know, crack some holes and you've got a guy like Leonard Fournette, you know, your offense is going to be in pretty good shape.
You know, Ben, sometimes you can skew numbers. This worst-ranked rush defense in the NFL that Cincinnati has, how true is that? I mean, are these third, fourth quarter yardage that are piled up when a team has a lead, or have they been able to get after it early in the first quarter and run at Cincinnati?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, Lamar Jackson obviously had a big game last week, but, you know, about 30-ish of those yards came at the end of a half when, you know, they kind of wanted him to pick up those yards and not run out of bounds, which is exactly what happened. However, you go look at you know, the Ravens had a 9-minute drive last week to kind of just drain the game in the second half. You know, you've seen teams run the ball really successfully. You know, the 49ers did a really good job of that. And ever since then, really, the blueprint's been there on how to attack this defense. And, you know, the linebacking play has been one of the biggest question marks, you know, and with Preston Brown and Nick Vigil. And right now, you know, I think they'd like to, Lou Anarumo, their defense coordinator, would like to run a 3-4. But because of the way the roster is composed, they don't have enough linebackers to make that work. So what they're doing essentially is running a 5-2. Up front, and you know, the teams are exploiting the edges, and the linebackers aren't filling, you know, aren't where they need to be, and so there are a lot of issues in the run game that I think are I think the stats are indicative of that. So this isn't something where the stats are inflated or not telling a true story. I think after six games, it is what it is, and you can see it in the fact that the Bengals, I think, you know, they've defended the fifth fewest targets in the NFL, and then they have the most rushing attempts defended by a mile. So teams obviously know what the blueprint is. Stop this team is to go on the ground and see what you can get.
Not interesting. Gardner Minshew looked like a rookie last week. It was not his best performance. We know that Dre Kirkpatrick missed last week, out again this week. Former corner William Jackson III will not go with a shoulder. So, you know, tell us about this young secondary now that all of a sudden Cincinnati will employ, and, you know, just overall, what you believe Gardner Minshew and this pass offense will be able to do against Cincinnati.
You know, it's going to be fascinating, because I think I hate to keep dogging on the Bengals here, but it is what it is. You normally don't get that from the normal beat guy who's in town. But, you know, I think Gardner Minshew and the Jags are going to have plenty of, you know, areas if they want to, whatever matchup they feel like they can win. I think that's what they're going to exploit. You know, like you said, your starting cornerbacks are out, and Drake Patrick and William Jackson. You know, I think the pass defense has been better this year. You know, because of what they're like up front, I think they're trying to scheme around it, and it's been a difficult time for them. And I think it's going to be a lot of the ground game. I think Gardner Minshew is going to be asked to do a lot of easy things. You know, I don't think it's got to be too complex to beat this defense because of how it is up front, especially when you look at who's going to be coming in at corner. You know, Darquez Denard opened the year on the PUP list. He was activated today, so he'll be back at a starting spot. BWF is especially playing with one arm. He'll be a corner, and then you've got Tony McCray, another guy who's going to be a backup corner and who's played well in spots. But, you know, by and large, I think that, you know, the there haven't been a ton of questions asked of the secondary, and that's because, you know, like I said, most teams are running the ball. And so, you know, if I think this game could get interesting if the Bengals are good up front and the Jaguars can't get some penetration at the line of scrimmage. But, you know, by and large, I think the key to victory for Jacksonville is going to be in. And if the Bengals want to stay in this, is they've got to be able to stop the run and see what Gardner can do and test his arm through the air.
Ben Baby's our guest, covers the Bengals for ESPN, joining Rick Ballew on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, we just here over the last 3 weeks went through the Jalen Ramsey situation. Now Cincinnati's got one of their own with Cordy Glenn, who, you know, reportedly was brought back after a concussion practice Wednesday, got into it yesterday, and has now been suspended. Take us through that story, and how hard is this on a first-time head coach like Zach Taylor to try to put the flames out in a situation that's taking place like this?
Yeah, you know, it's been a fascinating situation because obviously we've been tracking Cordy since he's been out since August. And, you know, this has been a very interesting circumstance. You know, it got to the point last week where, you know, I asked Zach if Cordy had been genuine through the concussion protocol process, and he believed Cordy Glenn still wanted to play football. And Zach answered affirmatively to both of those. I mean, even if you didn't want to answer no, I think there were different ways to answer that question. But he said yes, and so, I'll take it for what it's worth. But, it's interesting, the timing of it yesterday coming out right before practice when we obviously would have figured out that Cordy wasn't out there. He's practiced once fully since he suffered the concussion in August. And, you know, I think there's a lot of questions right now over how much he wants to play football and kind of what it's going to be like moving forward. I think for many of us here, it's almost impossible to see him playing again for this team. I imagine that there's going to be some warriors involved when it comes to trying to figure out how this, because he's going to keep getting fined. They're going to want to fight the fines. This is far from being over. And, you know, what makes this interesting is that, you know, former Miami Dolphins offensive line coach Jim Turner is the offensive line coach here in Cincinnati. Turner was fired after the Jonathan Martin debacle there. And I covered Jim, you know, for 3 years at Texas A&M. And, there wasn't any grumblings of any misconduct when he was there in terms of, on-field stuff. And by and large, I don't think there's been any complaints of Turner inside the locker room, the current offensive lineman. And, you know, we've had a few guys leave, and it's been a very tumultuous time on the line. And, you know, Taylor was asked straight up, do you think that there's been any issues? And, you know, he was quick to say no. And those two have ties going back to their time, you know, in Miami. So yeah, it's been a very interesting year so far for them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, final thought on this. You know, the line's been somewhere in the neighborhood of 3-4 favoring Jacksonville. Yet, you know, 3 weeks ago, I'm doing radio in Denver, and everyone there thinks the Broncos are going to win. They're desperate. Same with in Carolina 2 weeks ago, last week in New Orleans. A lot of people thought New Orleans come in here and win. I guess what I'm getting at is there still isn't a lot of respect for the Jaguars by their opponent. What is your understanding, Ben, this week in Cincinnati? Is this a four-quarter football game? Is this where the Bengals finally get off the schneid, or did the Jags come in there and win a ball game?
Yeah, you know, I think it depends on if the Bengals can run the ball a little bit. You know, Jacksonville hasn't been great in rush defense this year, you know, 25th in the league at 131 yards a game. So, you know, for Joe Mixon in this run offense, that's really struggled. It's by far the worst in the league as well, just like the run defense is. And so if they can get something going there, maybe get some rhythm offensively, that might, you know, make this an interesting game. But, you know, by and large, I think that you know, that Jacksonville should win. I've got them covering on the road, which kind of tells you what you need to know about Cincinnati. And really this pass rush has been, you know, pretty solid. You know, Calais Campbell, you know, Josh Allen, Kentucky guy, I'm sure he's going to have a ton of people, you know, because Lexington's just down the road from Cincinnati. So, they'll be at the game Sunday, and he's been really impressive. And I watched him last year when Kentucky came to A&M, and I thought he was phenomenal. So I think this pass rush is going to really give Cincinnati fits, and I wouldn't be shocked if they have a performance like they did a few weeks ago in Tennessee. When, and I don't know if they're going to get 9 sacks like they did, but I wouldn't be shocked if they get if they get 4 or 5, because the Bengals have struggled at times, and you know, they're going to be going up against a fourth string left tackle, which is going to be a good sign. So this could be a very good matchup for Jacksonville on Sunday.
Well, I had third string, so John Jerry's a fourth string left tackle.
Correct, because Jonah Williams out of Alabama was the first string. He's on the pup with a shoulder. Cordy Glenn's a second teamer. He's out. And Andre Smith, when they signed him, he was supposed to be an emergency tackle. He ended up being the week one starter.
Wow.
Now he's out, and now you're at fourth string John Jerry, who's almost never played tackle and has only been a guard.
Unbelievable.
And they just moved him out there. So if he goes down, they got a guy off the street the other day who they'll put in. So this is going to be an interesting Sunday.
No doubt about it. Hey, Ben Baby, thank you for your time. We'll see you out there this weekend.
Sounds good. Y'all take care.
There he goes, Ben Baby, ladies and gentlemen. He is with ESPN covering the Cincinnati Bengals. Boy, I was under the impression this was their third string left tackle with Andre Smith out and Cordy Glenn out, but you heard him say Williams put on the pup list. So John Jerry, a converted guard, will be the starter at left tackle, a fourth string left tackle. I remember here when Telvin wasn't there, then all of a sudden Quincy Williams was out, and at that point it was Najee Good talking about how much of a step back it looked like with a third-string Will linebacker. Najee Good played well last week, I thought. As a matter of fact, he'll get his second consecutive start on Sunday. But, boy, that is really saying something going the other way there for Cincinnati. All right, thank you to Pet Paradise. They have a state-of-the-art resorts all throughout Jacksonville. Offer safe, clean, fun environment for any of your four-legged pets and peace of mind for their owners. Pet Paradise has five North Florida locations, including one at the Jacksonville Airport that's open 24 hours, 7 days a week, veterinary clinic on site. Pet Paradise is the official pet service provider of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Visit petparadise.com to book your pet's next vacation. One of those is right out where I live in Bartram, and I drive by it daily. Looks like those dogs are having a heck of a good time. So, if you work, you can drop them off for a few hours, depending on, work full-time, part-time, whatever it is. Great folks there at petparadise.com. All right, let's turn our attention to some college football. Tim Brando joins me at 6 o'clock right here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. That's good to have you with us. I'm Rick Ballew with you for one more hour. We'll go to 7 o'clock tonight. Very busy hour, and right now we talk some college football. It is brought to you by ServPro, North Florida franchises making fire and water damage like it never happened. You can find them at 1-800-SERVPRO or go to servpro.com. Agents are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our friend Tim Brando has got an exciting one this week, an undefeated Baylor at Oklahoma State. That'll be at 4 o'clock on Fox alongside Spencer Tillman and Coley Harvey. But, Tim, let's begin with Georgia. South Carolina, a winner 20-17 in double overtime. Some will say this is a hit to Georgia as far as the title. I don't believe so. They beat Florida. They beat Auburn. They win an SEC championship game. I think they still get in. But right now, how alarming is this for the Dogs?
Well, it's got to be very alarming. But you also have to credit South Carolina. That's a signature win for Will. They were on his case in Columbia. For years I've said South Carolina fans were maybe the most realistic and best fans in the SEC. Well, now they've been in the SEC long enough to go the other way. It's like they were like firing, get rid of him. They sounded like everybody else in the SEC has sounded for so long. But that was a great plan that they had. And to do it with a third string quarterback too. They did it with field position, playmaking capability. The kid that made the big picks, by the way, is a Shreveport kid. Great
right.
athlete.
Right.
And I think honestly, if you look at what happened to Georgia, they could have easily been Clemson. That could have been Clemson. We know that. I mean, they got away with it in North Carolina. They did. Mm-hmm. So, Georgia had a bad game. Teams, even those that are considered elite, can have bad weeks in college football. Running with a full cup of success is, and then playing a lesser opponent in today's world with the millennial cohort being what it is. This is what coaches are dodging every week. And I think the biggest key from an X's and O's standpoint, the mental part of it is predictable. Okay, the not respecting your opponent part, I think is. Somewhat easy for some fans anyway to come to terms with. What I think Georgia fans are having real problems with, and I get it, is where's the separation from these wide receivers?
Exactly.
Why aren't they getting open? Okay. That does not bode well for them, particularly given how great the wide receiving corps at LSU and Alabama are.
Right. And they lost their top five targets, including their tight end Isaac Nauta. So you could kind of foresee this coming.
Yeah. But they've also recruited so well.
Sure.
I mean,
and they had a couple of transfers.
To a Georgia fan, Yeah, you talk to a Georgia fan that's throwing Mark Richt's record in your face at a similar time and where Kirby is now, and they'll say, yeah, but you know, we finished 1, 2, and 3 in recruiting in successive years. You know, Richt was around 8, 9, 10, 11. You start throwing around stats on recruiting to justify your team's poor play.
Right.
That's a reach, Richt. That's a big-time reach. So I think that there's legitimate – now, that's what we call an Oklahoma State Pistol Pete pickup truck that just went by there.
I was wondering what that was.
That's a Pistol Pete pickup truck. But honestly, that's the thing that I think has to be concerning for Georgia is, you know, you should win the games you've got left. And you certainly have teams that you can beat to elevate you back up. As I said in my On Brando piece that was circulating on Fox.com this week, you know, they won't fall precipitously. And falling down to 10, you got plenty of time from 10 to work your way back up if you're Georgia. You know, and where they were, they're going to drop 4 or 5 spots, but you beat Auburn, you beat Florida, you represent the East, you win that game, you're going to get in. I mean, so you get second chances when you're part of the pure playoff privileged, and Georgia is. You know, they've earned that with the sweat equity of getting to a national title recently and losing it, but being close and being, I think everyone thought last year it's the team that was left out that shouldn't have been left out. So they will get every opportunity to get back and get in the college football playoff because of their brand and because of who they have to beat to get into a position to play for the SEC championship.
Tim Brando, our guest, joins us here each and every Friday. Of course, he's got a big one coming up this weekend. Baylor going to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State. He'll be alongside Spencer Tillman and Coley Harvey. All right, I thought a year ago this turnaround in the Swamp, and it was, in my opinion, really the biggest win early on for Dan Mullen and his career, only because it was of the come-from-behind variety. Felipe Franks was outstanding in the second half. He's out now. We just talked about South Carolina. Can this team win 2 enormous games in a row, or does this really pave its way for Florida to get back on the winning ways?
I think it paves the way for Florida to get back on the winning ways. I'm impressed with the way they played, Richt. I told you I thought the number was too large, and then I made a late change. I made a late change in my 6-pack of picks, and I did give LSU the 13.5, and they barely covered. But I thought at the late stages, I decided to go ahead and pick LSU in the points last week because of their big play capability, and that's what happened. You know, and Florida was going in; they had to get a touchdown, otherwise they would have covered. They certainly were competitive. They had the lead in the third quarter. So, but the thing that jumped out at me, and I think it probably jumps out to everybody else, is, you know, this is an LSU team that was shut out by Alabama a year ago with Joe Burrow at quarterback, and they score 42 on what might be the best defense in the league. You know, Florida may be they're certainly playing better than Georgia right now. You know, you can make a case that's the best defense in the league, and LSU lit them up for 42. But I think offensively, the thing that really was impressive to me was how ready for the moment Trask was and how they responded after the break. And I honestly thought, and I tweeted this out before our game started, I was out on the West Coast with Pac-12 After Dark. I really thought if Florida got a 28-21 lead, that was absolutely going to put the clamps on LSU, that would tighten them up, that we might see some of you know, LSU's past start rearing its ugly head, particularly at home. You know, when you're the higher-ranked team, you're undefeated, and the pressure's on you, you fall behind, now what? You know? And LSU never really got a pass rush without getting help from its perimeter. They could not get to Trask, and then they ultimately did. Their defense got better in the fourth quarter in getting to him, but I was impressed with the way Florida played across the board. And after looking at the game, I will tell you that I was one of those that felt going into the season, and I'll admit it, I was wrong. I thought Georgia would be a runaway freight train right now, Florida's the better team.
Mm-hmm.
Florida's playing better. And if something doesn't happen to change that, by the time we get to the border war, I may pick them. But this is a Florida team that is much more impressive than I thought they were going to be. In a lot of ways, they remind me of Penn State.
Yes.
Penn State was a team in transition with a quarterback. No one knew what was going to quite happen with them. They had lost some big play guys as running backs and wide receivers. And the question was with their offense. You knew the defense was good, but you just didn't know about the offense. Well, to me, Florida is sort of the SEC's version of Penn State. And I think both of those teams are better than they're ranked, even though Florida has lost the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Florida lost at the toughest place right now to play in the SEC.
I agree with that.
And they were highly competitive while losing that game.
Yeah, and it's not too often that you gush over a player after a loss, but, I mean, come on, not starting in 7 years. For Kyle Trask to do what he did, to go in that environment and have Florida as competitive as they were offensively, yeah, really says an awful lot about this guy. I mean, I don't think any challenge ahead of him is going to be too big, including the one here against Georgia in a few weeks.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And, you're beginning to hear whispers now also about Dan Mullen's abilities in terms of preparation of a quarterback for the big moment. And if it has to be a backup, it has to be a backup. He did this at Mississippi State,
mm-hmm,
with lesser talent. You know, he did it. And I don't think anyone's questioning Dan's in-game decisions quite the way they're questioning Kirby's in-game decisions. And when that game finally happens, it's going to be one of those that stands out in a lot of people's minds for a number of reasons. No question about it. And I was one of those that felt Georgia would be head and shoulders above Florida this year.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah. I had Georgia this year at 10-2, and I had Florida at 9-3. We'll see when it all ends up, but that'll be an interesting one coming up in a couple of weeks. Hey, let's wrap with this enormous number in Tuscaloosa. We talked about the huge number a week ago in Clemson, and certainly they covered against Florida State. I mean, this thing now is heading towards 35. It may be even larger come kickoff on Saturday, and yet I don't even think that's enough. Why do I believe at 9 o'clock at night Alabama wins this game by at least 40?
Yeah, Alabama is on cruise control. And Rick, they face a similar situation this year that they did a year ago. You know, they got to get to the end of that schedule sooner rather than later. Until they measure up against LSU and Auburn, what do they really have to challenge them? And that secondary, you know, when I watched LSU's problems with Florida, it was in their secondary. Well, LSU's problems are no different than the problems Alabama has defensively. It's in their secondary. And, the problem is Tennessee doesn't have anybody to challenge that secondary.
Exactly, right.
And that's the issue. So, you know, Tennessee's way of winning, their only way of winning, is by establishing the run. They won't be able to do that. And, yeah, we're looking at a long wait for a long blowout in the SEC late at night in Stark Vegas. LSU will be playing, and that's a team that I think could do the same thing. I think both of those games will be mirror images. I think LSU blows out Mississippi State, and I think Alabama at home will blow out Tennessee with ease.
It's really
a shame that the regular season for these teams, like Clemson, like Alabama, are so boring, because it's painting the national narrative as a negative one for college football. How many times have we talked about scheduling inequities?
Yeah, it doesn't count.
College football faces.
Yeah.
And those two teams embody it. You know, okay, we're waiting until January so we can see these teams. In the meantime, what are they doing? Blowout after blowout after blowout. It's not good for college football.
It is not good for college football. What would Brother Bino say about that?
Huh, Branto, it's unbelievable. Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. And by the way, my friend Don Bernstein, longtime public relations director, followed me on ABC, worked for Roone. He worked for Rude Arledge back in the day. He's come to see me. He's come home to heaven to see me, Rick Maloof. And by the way,
yes,
when it comes to LSU, remember this about LSU. They've always had the material, and much like Dracula, they do their best work after dark.
Well said. I loved Rude Arledge's book. The chapters alone on Howard Cosell were historic, no doubt about it. Let's wrap with the weekly Tim Brando flying the ointment game, please.
There is a game down in Natchitoches, Louisiana. Pay close attention to it. Northwestern State has really struggled. Really, really struggled. They got a home tilt against a heavy opponent that's a major, major, I'm talking a huge Southland Conference favorite. And they are going to pull off the upset of all upsets. Go with the Demons of Northwestern State at home in the land of the Natchitoches meat pie.
There he goes. Outstanding. All right, Tim, hey, you have a great one out there in Stillwater. Should be a heck of a lot of fun. 4 o'clock on Fox, yourself, Spencer Tillman, and Coley Harvey. We'll talk again real soon. Thank you, as always.
You got it, Rick.
There he goes, Tim Brando, each and every Friday, brought to you by ServPro, right here in Jacksonville. Call 1-800-SERVPRO. Go to servpro.com. They're a trusted leader in restoration and really the entire industry. Here in North Florida, franchises are locally owned and operated. Owners have experience and witness being separated from your home or business due to fire and water damage and understand how important it is to make it better. And at times, and really consistently across the board, it's even better than it was prior to the accident. That's how they're able to do it there at ServPro. So go ahead and give them a phone call 24 hours a day, 1-800-SERVPRO, or visit servpro.com. Coming up next, we make our weekly picks. That's all next as we continue with our Football Friday show. I'm Rick Ballew. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Four hours of nothing but football. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
All right, we're busy around here. Big day coming up tonight. Day and night in high school football. Hacker Nation about 20 minutes away. We'll get to him, including one on TV a little bit later on. So that'll be pretty cool. Some future quarterbacks on their way to Florida State and Georgia, respectively. We'll get into that with Hacker Nation. Also, this is 100% football, but I just got to throw out there, go Houston. Get it done tonight against the Yankees. Take the wooden stake and pile it right through the heart, right there in the middle of the evil empire. Justin Verlander, James Paxton, coming up at 7:08. All right, Jaguars board a plane tomorrow. They head to Cincinnati. One of the games that we will pick, as a matter of fact, let's do that right now. We do it each and every week. We make 10 picks, 5 in college, 5 in the NFL. Brought to you by Carve Vodka, which is getting a lot of play lately. Played golf with a good buddy of mine, Hayden Zani, earlier in the week. Young kid, 22, 23, says his buddy's drank the Carve Vodka, Craft Vodka. Of course, a week ago Friday I was at the Blue Crab Crab House, having top-shelf Carve Vodka right there, Bloody Mary's. It's Jacksonville's first craft vodka, distilled 7 times from 100% corn. I've actually visited the distillery. It's called Gray Matter Distillery, and it's very cool. You should try it out. Give it a shot. It is at Total Wine ABC, and again, you'll find it at restaurants and bars all throughout North Florida. Carve your path with Carve Craft Vodka. All right, last week, Rick Ballew went 7-3. RJ Saunders wins 5-5. Season totals, Ballew 46-24, Saunders 37-33. Should I allow you to go first, or do you want me to go first? You can try to pick up a game. How do you want? Or you want to go vice versa, the way we've always done it?
Go vice versa, Rick. I'm getting close, man. I'm getting close.
You are getting close. That's what I like about you. You're part of never give up. It's like
today's millennials and Generation Z. You folks never give up. You always grind it out. No transfers, no quitting jobs, no mommy, I want to go here. Mommy, I'm not the starting quarterback. I want to go there. I love you kids, the kids of America.
That's not what you were saying last night, Rick.
Texas A&M, Ole Miss. I'm going with Texas A&M. It's interesting. A lot of picks I have this week. I'm going to actually hope that I lose, but I got to make the pick based on what I believe. I think A&M wins this game at the Grove. How do you see it?
I think it's going to be a good game, but I'm in agreement with you. I got Texas A&M.
All right, right at you, RJ Saunders. The whiteout at Penn State. It's Michigan-Penn State.
Give me the Nittany Lions over Michigan.
What a great environment that must be. I'd love to be there for a whiteout. That's going to be pretty cool. Michigan showed something against Iowa. Impressed there, but I still think Penn State at home, just too difficult. Florida goes into South Carolina. I absolutely believe so. I feel as though South Carolina, had an enormous win a week ago. The only thing that would worry me with Florida is a hangover here, but they're so well coached, and if they go into South Carolina and win, then all of a sudden that game here against Georgia really is going to be 3 points or less. All along, I just talked about it with Tim Brando, all along I've been under the impression that I thought Georgia was the better team and Georgia's going to win this game. Tables are beginning to turn a little bit here. I'm not saying I'm going to pick Florida in a couple of weeks, but they're a better team than South Carolina. I totally expect them to be able to go in there, win a football game. Which way are you going?
I think if this is a low-scoring game like it was for South Carolina last week, I think they win. But I think Florida just has a little bit too much, and they walk out of here with a W.
RJ Saunders, Florida State is going into Wake Forest. How do you see it?
I'm going to go with Florida State. Go Seminoles.
Here's the way I look at this game. I set it at 5 o'clock. It's now 6:28. There is a tropical depression. There is a hurricane. There is nastiness in the sense of Mother Nature. And his name is Nestor. And he's going to be hovering throughout Winston-Salem. It's going to affect the berm. Young co-eds won't be snuggling. I don't think there'll be hardly anyone there. But it's not going to matter. The excuses have been rampant, and I can tell you right now, the way this ball game is going to go, the rain, the torrential downpours, everything bad that can possibly happen will only happen to those wearing garnet and those wearing gold. Wake Forest knocks off Florida State this weekend. Let's go to Georgia Tech, Miami. How do you see this one, RJ?
I really want to pull for Miami sometimes because there's some people in studio that are Miami fans. And you know what? I'm going to go with Miami this week. I say they get the win over Georgia Tech.
I'm going to do the same. Give me the Canes. They knock off Georgia Tech. I am in total agreement. All right, let's shift our attention to the National Football League. We got 5 games on tap, including the Jaguars, which we will certainly get to last. Let's begin with a divisional matchup, and this is a big one here. Houston at Indianapolis. I mean, my goodness, both teams just had complete success against the Kansas City Chiefs. Both teams as well, fighting through some injuries. It's the toughest game, in my opinion, to pick this week in all of college football. But I'm going to go with Houston here to win on the road, being able to get it done. I understand Indy has been able to take advantage as well as, with the bye, but I'm still going to take Houston. How do you see it?
I think Houston's really found their groove right now in this part of the season, so I'm going to go with Houston defeating Indy.
All right, to you, the Los Angeles Rams in Atlanta.
I don't want to pick L.A. just because of what Jalen Ramsey did, but I got to stay true to where I'm from. So give me the Rams over Atlanta.
You're going to buy a Jalen Ramsey Los Angeles Rams shirt, aren't you?
Absolutely
Admit
not.
Admit it right now.
Absolutely not.
If you were to take a survey right now, 99.9% of the listening audience loves RJ Saunders. Feel free to create an enemy or two. Admit it right now. You're getting a Rams Jalen Ramsey jersey.
No, I'm not. Duval.
Todd Gurley is back for the Rams. Boy, insult to injury. Do you realize that Jalen Ramsey is not even on the injury report? Let that settle in. I mean, he's not even on the injury report. Boy, he just used and abused and babied his way out of town. I would love to see Julio Jones in Atlanta just destroy Jalen Ramsey. The problem is Atlanta, their secondary is really beaten up, and they can't stop anyone. I think there's way too much explosiveness coming from the Rams on the other side. I'm with you, RJ. I like LA to win this ball game on the road at Atlanta. Another one that was very difficult to pick was the Los Angeles Chargers, so they're in a little bit of a funk. They go to Tennessee. I'm going to take LA here. You know, Ryan Tannehill is going to get the start. I always look at Nashville as being a very difficult place to play because whenever I go there with the Jaguars, they struggle. I just think if LA is really going to get back into this thing, it's kind of like the Jags. They're both 2-4. They got to win road football games this weekend. So give me the Los Angeles Chargers. Who you going with?
We need teams in our division to lose, but it's hard for me to say Tennessee's losing this one, so I'm going to go with the Titans.
Going with the Titans right back at you. RJ going with the Titans. All right, right back at you. Seattle playing host to Baltimore.
I'm a Ravens guy, so I can't go against the Ravens now. So let's go Baltimore.
All right, I'm going Seattle. Long trip. I think Seattle, I think right now Wilson, you know, what Russell Wilson has done, he is arguably the MVP. As a matter of fact, I don't even think it's really an argument. I think he's hands down the MVP based on what we have seen so far this year. Let's wrap it up. Sunday at 1, pregame at 8, postgame to follow. We are your home with the Jacksonville Jaguars on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Jags go to Cincinnati. Can they win out there for the first time since 2002?
Listen, I know that Cincinnati is looking for their first win this season, but you're not going to get it against us. Duval is going into Cincinnati. We're getting a win. We're right back on track in the division.
Last time the Jags won in Cincinnati was in 2002 by a score of 29-15. It was week 15 of the 2002 season, and it was historic. It was the last victory ever for Tom Coughlin as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think they do that as well this week. They go on the road and win at Cincinnati. I tell you what's really scary about my picks. I'm taking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm taking 6 out of the 10 road teams to win. And I'll be honest about it. I'm taking Wake Forest over Florida State right now simply because I am a very, very extremely emotionally disturbed Seminole fan. So I guess it's 5-5. But I am, for the record, let it reflect that I am taking Wake Forest. There you go. Picks are in. Blue with a record of 46-24. Saunders with a record of 37-33. Again, thank you to Jacksonville's First Craft Vodka. That is Carb Vodka, available everywhere right now. Total Wine, ABC, local restaurants, local bars. Craft Carb Vodka is Jacksonville's First Craft Vodka, established in 2014. The vodka is distilled and bottled at the Gray Matter Distillery, which I have visited. It is very, very cool. Distilled 7 times from 100% corn. Carve your path with Carve Craft Vodka. There you go. Coming up next, Hacker Nation joins us. We'll get into some of the big games going on tonight in the world of high school football.
Starting the weekend with football, Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Rehabilitation Football Friday night on 1010XL.
Busy hour. Thank you to Tim Brando. He is in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I'm sure there's no place he'd rather be. Our picks that we made a few moments ago, someone just lit you up on the text line. Built by Lifetime Enclosures, said this, RJ, Jalen's biggest fan. I was talking to Jalen the other day, and he was like, and I quote, "You know who my biggest fans are? God, my mama, and RJ." in that order. Yeah. Because everyone knows you've already purchased the Jalen Ramsey Los Angeles Rams.
Nothing further from the truth.
Mm. I got feelers out there. I've got peeps. I've got sources. You're getting exposed right now for everyone to read on the 1010XL text line. Let's bring in Hacker Nation. What a night for high school football. Hackers with you each and every day, noon to 3 on 1010XL in 92.5 FM. And he joins us as he does each and every week to talk high school football. It's brought to you by JOI, where the pros go. Hacker, how are you?
Rick, I'm good, man. And yeah, what a night of high school football. What a night last night was of high school football, as the regular season, believe it or not, is beginning to wind on down.
Give us kind of, give us a one-up. What happened last night in high school football?
Well, the biggest game, Rick, was Trinity Christian. They beat Lee 21-12. Huge win for Trinity. We talk every week about the schedule they have played, but they were 3-5 entering last night's game. They need to win just to solidify their spot in the 3A playoffs. I believe they'll get in. Last night's win over Lee did a huge benefit to them. Keep in mind, Lee beat Lake City Columbia a week ago tonight, so Trinity over Lee was huge. And then a story that I love. I mean, Rick, you know how hard it is to turn a program in high school football. Well, how about this? Terry Parker got a win last night. Westside got a win last night, which means 1 week from tonight, that Parker-Westside game is for a district championship. I cannot tell you the last time either school has won a district title, but that's going to be a lot of fun when Parker and Westside get together next week for a district title.
Wow, outstanding. 1 week from Friday, that'll take place. All right, a lot of hype here in town tonight. ESPNU is in Jacksonville. Of course, we are well aware that both quarterbacks on their way to both Florida State and Georgia respectively, but Sandalwood and Mandarin will have at it later.
Yeah, this is one of the games that you circled when the high school schedule came out. ESPNU is televising this game at 7 o'clock right after you sign off with your program. You got Carson Beck and Mandarin. Carson, of course, committed to Georgia. You got Jeff Sims and Sandalwood. Jeff, as you know, Rick, obviously committed to Florida State. And the more intrigue to this game, if you will, is basically a playoff game. Both of these teams need to win to keep their postseason hopes alive. So not only do you have the Carson Beck, Jeff Sims angle, but you have a must-win scenario for both clubs tonight. And again, that game will air on ESPNU nationally at 7 o'clock this evening.
All right, let's spend a minute on this. We're seeing more and more freshman quarterbacks come in and get the opportunity, you know, right out of the gate. Georgia's done it with consecutive freshmen, two of which are playing at other schools right now. So we'll leave kind of Carson Beck out of the equation, although Jake Fromm probably leaves after this year. But, I mean, there are problems in Tallahassee right now. So take us through Sims' game. I know early in the year we talked about it, and I saw the highlight, that long run that went for like 65 yards. What about him as a passer? What has he been able to do so far during his senior year?
Yeah, he's done some good things. Now, the record doesn't indicate it, but they've lost to some really good programs, Sandalwood has, including losing to Reigns in overtime, 22-21. Reigns, the back-to-back state champion. So you're going to look at their 3-3 record, and you're going to think, well, maybe a disappointing year, but not the case. Jeff Sims is a terrific player. They've had some injury problems over there. I've had many conversations with Adam Geist, their head coach. They've been kind of hampered by injuries, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. But Jeff Sims, look, for all the issues going on in Tallahassee and for all the unhappy people that watch and support Florida State football, Jeff hasn't wavered once in his commitment. He's still very, very committed to Florida State, to my knowledge, still very committed to Willie Taggart and Kendall Briles and everything they're doing in Tallahassee. So I think it'll be interesting for Florida State fans tonight. If you're at home, turn on ESPNU and watch what could very well be the future of your quarterback position, that Sandalwood quarterback Jeff Sims.
I guess what I'm asking, Hacker, is that in 2 years when he's asked to do the daunting task to go into Winston-Salem at night and try to win a game, is Jeff Sims the type of guy who can do that?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Now, look, I mean, I've seen a lot of tape on him. I've seen him live, you know, 3 or 4 times throughout his career. In fact, Denny Thompson works with him pretty much every day at the Six Points Passing Academy. You know, boy, what an interesting night it is for Denny. He'll join me under the Friday Night Lights. He's at Sandalwood tonight for the game. but he trains both Carson Beck and Jeff Sims, so I'm sure he's going to be split right down the middle. But to answer your question, yes, Jeff Sims is a terrific football player. I think he's going to translate his game to the college game very nicely, and I think Florida State fans should be very happy that Jeff Sims is committed to Florida State University.
All right, Oak Leaf and Bartram Trail tonight.
You know, it's interesting. You know, we talk about Mandarin and Sandalwood, and that's getting all the love, all the acclaim, the ESPNU broadcast. Oak Leaf and Bartram is in the same district, maybe a bigger game. Bartram's undefeated, one of only, two or three teams that are still undefeated. Oak Leaf, Rick, this is the cruel reality of high school football. They've lost two games by a combined 3 points.
Wow.
They lost by 2 points to Lake City Columbia. They lost last week by one to Mandarin. Yet if Oak Leaf doesn't win tonight, their postseason hopes are in real jeopardy.
Mm.
And that just goes to show you how strong 8A football is. A Bartram Trail win over Oak Leaf coupled with a Mandarin win over Sandalwood, and Bartram's a district champion. If those things don't happen, that district can be thrown into chaos. But it is a huge night in District 1-8A for the best teams in the area, going at it in two games when you got Bartram at Oak Leaf and Mandarin at Sandalwood.
Unbelievable. Let's wrap with Fleming Island, another opportunity here for them to win a district title. Got to go to Hogtown, though, to get it done.
Yeah, Gainesville, Buchholz, and Fleming Island. Situation very simple for Fleming Island. A win tonight, and Fleming is a district champion. They are undefeated. Head coach Damian Springs does a great job at Fleming Island High School. They are, again, like Bartram Trail, one of the handful of teams that are still unbeaten, and they could be hoisting a district title tonight. All they have to do is beat a Gainesville Buchholz team. But we're at the time of year, Rick, where it's must-win, and Buchholz has to win tonight to keep their postseason hopes alive. So even though the playoffs, in theory, don't start until the second Friday in November, playoffs have already started for a lot of teams, including Gainesville Buchholz tonight.
I said that was in Gainesville. Is that there, or is it here in Fleming Island?
I believe it is in Fleming. It is in Fleming.
All right, set the table, Hacker. You'll be back here in a few hours. What's coming up tonight? High school football, what's on in the airwaves?
Yeah, when you sign off at 7, Rick, we're going to do a 30-minute, or Tony Smith and crew, we're going to do a 30-minute pregame getting ready for Bowles and Clay. Bulldogs have won 5 games in a row. They're looking to make that 6 in a row tonight. That kickoff will happen at 7:30. Bishop Kenny's on a bye week this week, so just Bowles and Clay tonight. And when Bowles and Clay go final, Denny Thompson and I will have the Friday Night Lights postgame. And early on tonight in the postgame show, I'm going to catch up with a lot of victorious coaches from last night, including Verlin Dormany of Trinity Christian and Rodney DeBose of Westside. So the coaches that won last night will join us early in the program, and the guys that play tonight will join us a little later on under the Friday Night Lights.
Outstanding, Hacker. Look forward to hearing from you then. Have a great evening, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Rick.
There he goes, Hacker Nation, with you each and every day, noon to 3 on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Brought to you by JOI, where the pros go. Some great high school football. Hopefully you're doing your part to go out, watch it, support it, and should be a whole heck of a lot of fun. All right, we're getting ready to sign off here in just a couple of moments. Final thoughts from me, because the next time that I will talk with you will be Sunday in Cincinnati. This really sets up well for Jacksonville. I mean, it does. No matter which way you look at Cincinnati, it's a very poor football team. This is a bad team that is injured. They're without 7 starters. They could be without 8 if Carlos Dunlap will not play or cannot play. They are the worst rushing team in pro football. And on top of that, they're without their starting right guard. They are down now to their 4th string left tackle. Okay? They've had a very difficult time as well, pass protecting. I would love to be able to sit here and say this is the type of game that Jacksonville gets out to an early lead and that they're able to make Cincinnati one-dimensional, but Jacksonville has struggled in the first half. Jacksonville has struggled to get out early. That's why my pledge all week, or at least for the last couple of nights, has been just give me a 7-0 Jacksonville lead. Have the Jaguars get out early in this game and play their style of football. Defensively, they're ripped apart injury-wise on the defensive line, and both of their starting cornerbacks are not going to be able to give it a go. Sets up well for Minshew on the road. The return of Josh Oliver helps out the Jaguars. D.D. Westbrook will probably be a game-time decision. My guess is we won't know until 11:30 on Sunday afternoon as to whether or not he's able to play with the shoulder. I like the Jags. I think they're able to get this thing done and then get ready for that matchup at home a week from Sunday against the New York Jets. So that's going to do it for us tonight. Producer, I want to thank R.J. Saunders. I also want to thank Gibby, Josh Oliver for joining me earlier in the program. We did talk with Ben Baby, who is the ESPN reporter for the Cincinnati Bengals. We talked with Tim Brando, who's in Stillwater for that game between Baylor and Oklahoma State. And moments ago, we just spoke with Hacker Nation. So that'll do it for us. Plenty of high school football coming up tonight. I will talk with you next, live from Cincinnati on the Jaguars Radio Network. My name is Rick Ballew. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.